Recording.
I don't see everyone.
Oops. So you missed my entire song.
Yes.
So excited about that getting on the episode. I'm not singing it again though.
All right, next time I'll start recording from as soon as we get on, so we keep all the good banter. All right. Hello, Denim Heads, and welcome to the 14th Hangout with the Sons of Selvage. This is a podcast where a group of friends get together to talk about denim, menswear, and related interests. We aim for this to be a fun and inclusive podcast where you feel like you're hanging out with longtime friends, but be warned, there's a bit of banter, cutting up, and explicit language. So in this episode, we'll go through current interests, a bit of news, some Q&A, and the discussion topic. It's denim season, aka it's fall or autumn. On that note, please rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. Also, please follow us on Instagram at Sons of Selvage Podcast. And lastly, please message us on Instagram any questions you'd like us to discuss in a future episode, or reach out to us if you'd like to join our Discord channel. On that note, let's do a quick round of introductions.
Yeah, I'm Andy.
I'm David.
I'm Ilya.
I'm Kevin.
Lexa.
I don't know why I'm always last, but I'm Tom.
Alpha sorting, man. Alpha sorting.
Oh, yeah, true.
We could do a surname next episode if you want to go earlier.
Yes!
We want you to feel special, too.
Yeah.
Cool. On that note, I guess let's jump right into current interests. Andy, do you want to kick things off?
Yeah. Obviously, it is spooky season, being October and all. And so I try every year to watch a horror film every day, which has completely failed this year because obviously having a very small child and commuting back into the city, it's just not been the best situation. But I have managed to watch a few, and the two that I, about the ones that I've watched that I really enjoyed the most were Todd Browning's Freaks from the 30s. Which is quite a famous one because it actually stars people with various physical differences, all playing circus performers. And in it, the real monsters are actually the more able-bodied humans, the people in it. And so and it's beautifully shot, especially the ending is really good. And it's not really a horror as such, but it kind of gets lumped in there. But that's a brilliant film. Really, really high recommend. And then the other one I watched is 1994's Bloody Muscle Bodybuilder in Hell, which is a Japanese... it's a Japanese Evil Dead ripoff about a dude who clearly isn't a bodybuilder, but claims to be. And his journalist ex-girlfriend and a psychic going to the house, his dad's old house, where his dad accidentally killed his mental girlfriend in an argument, and she now haunts the house. And it's done on a shoestring budget, like the effects are like stop motion, plasticine, paper mache, grey face paint and stuff, but it's hilarious. And you do get to see someone use one of those bow flexes to fire a barbell at someone like a bow and arrow. So it's on a, both of the films are currently on Amazon Prime in the UK for free. So highly recommend. You know, the second one is just like 2 minutes over an hour. It's a really short film, and it is kind of all going. So that's my first fad. So go around the houses first.
Cool. Yeah. So I guess I'll jump in next. So I ended up, even though I kind of was dogging on fade contests a bit in a past episode, I ended up joining. in America, that means like to kind of.
It's not a bit. That's a very British phenomenon.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I know about that kind as well. I should maybe change that vocabulary.
And yet.
dissing on. I was kind of talking negatively. With a sentiment about the Indigo Invitational in a recent episode. And I just happened to get my replacement Oak Street Bootmakers Trail Oxfords and Natural Chromexel the same day that the Stitch Down Patina Thunderdome contest launched. So I figured, screw it, why not? I'll join, you know, maybe meet some people and get some new podcast listeners. And so, yeah, I ended up jumping into the Stitchdown Patina Thunderdome. It's basically about wearing the same pair of shoes for 6 months. And there's like, you know, insane amounts of prizes. We covered it in a previous episode in terms of all the free stuff you can win. My initial strategy was to basically wear my shoes every day inside for the entirety of the contest and see if I could get like best indoor patina. But I finally decided that, you know, that's a bit silly and I probably won't win anything. So I've been wearing them outside every chance I get. And I'm actually really impressed with the make. I've got some Oak Street Bootmakers trench boots from years ago, and they're super fantastic, like, you know, really great Goodyear Welting construction. They're all sewn in Chicago. Really, really good quality. And it, for me, they feel like a brand that it's like, if you don't yet want to drop the price for like a pair of Aldens or a pair of Vibergs, but you want something above a pair of like Red Wings or Chippewa, they're kind of that like in between price point. So some of their boots are like, you know, I don't know, $300-$400 US. Some of their shoes are maybe like $200-$250. So kind of that same ballpark as like a Grant Stone. Or maybe there's someone else that I'm trying to think of. I forgot the name of, like Thursday or someone else. But anyways, really, really stoked with the shoes so far. One thing I will say, though, is I've got some Quody Trail Oxfords, or sorry, they call them their Trail Blukers. I can certainly say that lengthwise, the Oak Street Bootmakers and the Quodies are about the same length, which is great. But Quody's last is definitely a lot wider. And so I'm finding that the Oak Street Bootmakers are quite narrow, actually. And they're a bit squishy on the toes. But I guess Cremexel stretches quite a lot. So hopefully in time, they'll fit fine. But yeah, to start with, maybe Thursday's not the brand I'm thinking of. Someone mentioned in chat that might not be the right brand.
Maybe Truman, something like that.
Yes, Truman. Yeah. So Truman, Grant Stone, that kind of price point. But yeah, so I'm hoping they stretch out to in the width and kind of like break in as nicely as my Quodies. But construction's fantastic. You know, the natural Cremexel's great. I really can't fault a single thing about the make. Also, I should mention too that their customer service was super rad. I bought a 9.5 US originally based upon their sizing advice, and I definitely had to go up to a 10. So obviously I had to pay to ship them back to the States, but they were like super cool about it. They do free international shipping, which is pretty cool. So like it didn't cost me a penny extra to get them sent to the UK. And if you consider the fact that you're paying for a US price, yeah, that pretty much offsets any VAT costs that you might get hit with. And though it may be luck, it seems like I didn't necessarily get stopped by customs by them. You can read what you want to out of that in both times. So, definitely big shout out to Oak Street Bootmakers, second pair from them, and I'm really impressed. And on the Patina Thunderdome, so far so cool, you know, meeting some nice people. Pretty much everything takes place on their Discord, you know, lots of different chats and channels and kind of had a funny conversation I kicked off with some people around arch to heel length versus toe to heel length. And what was it? Something about foot tracing. Screw it. I forget. I'll skip that part. So yeah, that's my first bit of news.
Thank you, David. I will also add a bit, which I've picked up. I was lucky enough to track down a Freewheelers 37J1 aviator leather jacket in a Tatanka Brown horsehide shinky, which I was trying to get the previous year, but Freewheelers don't produce too many and they sell out quite quickly. And there's no stockists this side of Europe, really. I think there's Australia stock them. I think Collection have them in Australia. And apart from that, there's not many others. And yeah, luckily I just saw it come on eBay at a really good price, and I was like,
I hate you
okay,
so much.
let me give this a go. Like, I was a little bit worried about the sizing because freewheelers can be a little bit smaller, but it just fits perfectly for me, luckily. Just I went with a 42, which is kind of my normal jacket size in most brands. I'm naturally like a 40-41 chest, so but yeah, it's incredible, especially the leather. It's just something else. And I really like the styling of the, you know, the pre A1 style of jacket. I know not everyone is probably a fan of the pocket placements, but I really dig it over the A1 pocket style. And the pockets are a little bit bigger as well. So, yeah, it's probably one of my best pickups in a long time, and I feel like I want to really get some nice wear on it, and yeah, get nice creasing on the arms and get the leather to age. I took it with me to Poland, and I was like, I know a lot of people wouldn't necessarily wear it in the rain because it darkens, and you know, you might get spotting on it, but I'm of the attitude that if you're going to get something like that, just wear the fuck out of it.
Why would you wear a jacket and not wear it?
It's not just going to hang on the shelf and look pretty. I want to put it through its paces. I'm going to take it out on the road and let it pick up wherever, and then when it comes to getting it cleaned up, I'll do that and make sure it's maintained nicely. But yeah, big fan of it.
Should you take your jacket into the ocean and then kind of like prove how good it is at withstanding the elements?
Well, some people do go in the shower with their leather jacket so that it shapes to their their body type, just like they do with jeans. And I know, like, the campus, the natural campus leather, I think there was something about washing it before wearing, and it does shrink as well, so that's quite an interesting aspect to it, and you have to be quite careful. But yeah, I'm not gonna go to that length.
I think that's a bit extreme. That's probably like getting leather boots and being like, oh yeah, I've got to put my leather boots in water so they form to my feet properly.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah, I'll just throw out there.
Yeah, go on, David.
I'll just throw out there. I think it's crazy the people like doing the bathtub soak with jeans and then like wearing them around soaking wet until they dry. So I think all that stuff's crazy.
I guess it's part of the fun for some people. It's part of that kind of, the rites of passage for some people who are just getting into it might feel like, oh, that's a nice thing to do. But yeah, and some people claim that they get a better fit doing it that way. But it depends what kind of fit you're going for as well. If you're buying a quite a straight cut, it's not going to risk necessarily doing that much for you. If you're going for a more, maybe a fitted cut, then yeah, you might get a better molding. But I think if you're gonna wear it and you're gonna your body heat and all that all that good stuff is gonna mold it to your body anyway, so why put yourself through something like that unless you just feel
I always think it's just shortcuts to just wearing them. It's people like, oh, I want them to sit now.
So like, I can only
wear them twice.
Yeah, I was looking at the latest issue of Lightning magazine, the workwear issue, and one of the methods of getting the overalls kind of worn in is attached to the back of a bike and ride around the street until it's nice and scratched up, and then you can wear it, because some people don't want to have that kind of fresh look.
Future David here. Just wanted to add that my dad told me that back in the 1970s, they used to actually break in their raw denim jeans by driving over them in their driveway with their muscle cars. So kind of a cool analog to Ilya's story.
Yeah. Homeless life simulator.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like I want to intentionally have to wear around soggy, wet clothes that aren't dry.
Or you could do like they suggested on that podcast clip that's doing the rounds. You just give them to a homeless person to wear for a week and shit in them.
And
all that grim stuff. I mean, which when you the more you think about it, it's actually quite a horrible joke to make about homeless people. But
someone got in some really big trouble years ago in Austin for South by Southwest, where they basically paid homeless people to walk around with backpacks that were like little 3G cell phone towers, 4G cell phone towers. Like, I think it's during South by Southwest. Yeah. It's really big controversy, but they had basically paid a bunch of homeless people to like wear a backpack around downtown Austin during the festival to like give better phone reception. It was quite negatively received. That's another topic for another day, I guess.
Yeah.
I also know there was, I think it was at Denim in Japan, they gave away like 100 pairs of jeans to local workers and people part of the community to wear for a year and then to give back to the company. And then they would kind of actually resell them as a faded pairs, just, you know, quite interesting. But I think they were taking them back weekly, washing them and making sure that they didn't need any repairs or anything like that, no crotch blowouts. So they were kind of, it was a very specific way of doing it.
Yeah, it's interesting because like APC's Butler program, which they've done pretty much since they started like 10-20 years ago, probably like 20 years ago, I think seems like the best way to do it. It's basically buy your jeans, wear them. When you don't want them anymore, we'll buy them back from you for half price. We'll give you 50% store credit. Keep your old jeans. You could buy a new pair, and then they like repair and resell the old jeans, like patch them, fix them, whatever. And so that feels like it's pretty good because you basically get half off towards a new pair.
Yeah. I wonder if people actually buy them though.
They must have been doing it for a long time. Yeah, I think because like even you know you get a lot of people walking into shops and they see faded pairs and they're like, oh, how can I buy that pair? And you know it's like you always have to, you know, in the raw denim shops you kind of say, no, this pair is not for sale. This is just an example. But there are people who actually do want to, you know, buy that pair. So I'm sure there is. So
the amount of times that working in Son of the Stag, we had a pair of full counts that were worn by one of the main full count guys. The amount of times people should be like, oh yeah, so how much is that one? It's like, no. Look around. There are shelves and shelves of jeans.
Yeah. Why do you want that one?
Yeah. Just like some old ratty, like, you know, they're holes and stuff, like beautifully soft. Like they're incredible. A real kind of like showcase of like how the full counts can soften up. But it's just like, buy fresh ones.
I should raise the question of, or raise the point that if we ever ask ourselves why are these companies making stonewashed jeans, I think we have our answer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's definitely a market, but I think our point is that there's enough brands who are doing that kind of thing. Why do the raw, you know, the raw denim brands need to do that? I guess money, you can make it money. Yes.
Yeah, that person like asking in the shop will probably like just walk around to H&M and just buy like a pair of like faded H&M. You know, they're not in it for they like the brand or anything. It's just like, oh, that fade pattern's good, but they would see the same thing in a high street store and buy it. Like,
I guess the argument is that, oh, you don't want to buy a faded pair by a good company. I guess, you know, maybe that's the reason they don't want to just go and buy.
I think we're going down a bit of a rabbit hole here. I don't think we've actually gone through all the fads yet.
No, we haven't.
Yeah.
No, we'll get there.
I'm actually going to step away for a sec. I've got some really, really high-end expensive chocolate I bought in Paris. I'm going to go melt it down and make a hot chocolate for my for a quick snack, and I'll be back.
What's this?
What are you saying?
Sorry, I was trying to make a funny joke about acid washing really expensive raw denim, but
I gotta go poop, guys.
Yeah, I thought that was audible.
I will be editing that out.
I'll leave it in there.
It's a very good analogy, David. I like it. I like
it. I don't have any chocolate, but anyways.
So okay, let's move on. And Kevin, what have you been doing?
Kevin.
Yeah, look, I know this is an episode about fall, autumn, winter, and all that kind of, you know, seasonal stuff. But obviously, here in the Southern Hemisphere, it's all upside down. So, yeah, I've been kind of like getting ready for summer. Done a bit of shopping yesterday at Collection. So I bought a Pure Blue Japan Indigo Dyed t-shirt.
Nice.
It was just one of the 8-ounce cotton t-shirts. I remember like when I first moved here in 2017, we went to an event at Collection where the guys from Pure Blue Japan came over, because it was the first year that Collection had them or something, but they were launching these t-shirts and stuff, and they brought actually a t-shirt in, a worn one. And it looked amazing. So it's like, it's obviously like super dark now. I didn't back then. But I've always looked for them, but they always sell out very quickly in my size. But I was lucky enough that they had one still hanging there yesterday, so picked one of those up. And then I also picked up a pair of shorts by Japan Blue, also indigo dyed Sashiko shorts. But the whole shorts are dyed or over dyed in indigo. So it's not necessarily like your traditional Sashiko where you would see the white threads on the garment. So it has a really nice texture on the outside, obviously because of the threads that would usually come out. But yeah, so again, very dark at the moment. But what the guy was saying is that because there's obviously such a different texture, with like peaks and troughs in it, so like the top of the jean will, top of the shorts will fade fairly quickly, so they should become very high contrast at some point. So so two exciting new paces for summer. Probably still looking at some other shorts, like non-indigo, non-denim, but haven't really found something yet that tickles my fancy. Yeah, I thought about it, but I thought about joining the club. But not yet, no. I tried on one of Buzz Rickson's shorts today, but they were like super high-waisted, and I could barely sit down in them, so not a good idea for shorts, at least.
They are high-waisted and quite a wide leg as well, and quite a low leg, so probably not quite for your tastes.
Yeah, I mean, the wide leg was not necessarily that much of a problem. I quite liked it in the shorts, also because they have quite big, yeah, that as well, you know. It gets pretty warm warm here in Australia, so.
I've not heard
that. But like, yeah, our winters are 24, 25 degrees, so, you know, pretty cold.
Did the guys at Collection tell you that because those shorts have a higher rise, therefore you need a shorter inseam?
No, that was first of all not at Collection, but
Sorry.
Yeah, you got a little bit of an argument there, eh, with them.
No, I never responded. I never responded, but yeah, basically I was interested in these kind of like really cool black jeans they came out with, but they're all like 31, 32 inch inseam. And I emailed the guy and I was like, hey, you know, I'm a 32, 34, which is like a really common Levi size. I'm surprised you only have like 32, 30 or 32, 32, whatever it is. That seems like that would, you know, rule out a lot of your customers. He's like, oh, you know, I don't need to make them that long because they've got a high rise. And I was, so you just like, that makes up for the need for longer inseam. And I was like, he's like, you know, I wear this jean with this rise. And basically I didn't respond to him because I just knew it turned into an argument. But in short, what he was saying is that essentially higher rise jeans, you just wear them in the same place you always wear your jeans. And they've got like a lower crotch, therefore you need less inseam. And it's like, it just blew my mind away that such a famous shop would say that, because the higher rise, you obviously wear them higher. You know, your jeans should still sit roughly in the same place around your junk. But yeah, that was a bit.
It does depend, David, on like I, you know, I wear quite a few high-rise pairs of jeans and trousers. On some, you can get away with a shorter inseam. Like the warehouse pair that I have, I think that's only a 31 inseam, and I normally go for like a 33, or you know, I'm 6'2", and I can get away with a 31 inseam on it. It's like it's long enough. So it just depends, because some of those jeans will have a longer fly, and the space between the fly and the crotch is a little bit longer. So the inseam is still not up. You know, the crotch is not necessarily touching your balls, if you pardon my
you gotta say it, balls.
Yeah, balls. So yeah, it's kind of like a drop crotch basically on some of those pairs. I don't know, Tom, whether, and I know you like to wear some of your overalls which are quite quite tight.
but with some other
pairs that you might have had, I don't know whether you've had the same experience where the inseam doesn't need to be as long.
Yeah, I mean, like even for kind of my United overalls jeans, where it is between mid to high rise, I can have some days where if I'm wearing boots, I kind of do my belt up a little bit tighter, wear them a little bit higher, and the cuff is kind of sitting just above the boot, well not above the boot but you know, higher, and then like if I'm wearing sneakers and stuff, then I'll like undo the belt a little bit, wear them a little bit lower, and then they're kind of sitting sneaker height. So you can play around with it, but for the guy to just say, oh no, this is the rule, it's a bit like he should be like, oh, how would you wear these jeans? Or, you know, do you usually wear them lower rise? Or, you know, and really he should have been like, oh, this is the measurement of the rise. You know, take that into effect, like when comparing it to jeans that you wear. And if you're planning to wear them the same as those jeans, then you can get away with it. If you want to wear them as a high rise, then you probably should need that little bit of extra length because you're lanky. So it was a very kind of very offhand way of just being like, oh, yeah, you can just wear them the same way. And it's the same.
I agree. I think the way he handled it is probably not the best, but some of what he's saying does ring true from my experience.
You've just got to work out what the customer's going to do with it first.
Yes, yes.
From a technical point of view, when you're cutting trousers, generally if the fit is slightly looser, you drop the rise ever so slightly because, as you said, you don't want it kind of near your balls on a loose pair. So you generally kind of actually do drop it. So, yeah. So from a technical point of view, they might be a little bit, but again, I agree. You should just say no. You should kind of discuss it with the customer.
Yeah, it's not even I should clarify too that this was just over an email thread. It's not like the guy went on like a Instagram rant or anything. So, you know, it was a private email just to me. But yeah, I think the key thing is just I've had two high rise pair of jeans, one from BLA, Black Horse Lane, and then one from Tanuki. And in both cases, the rise is about an inch higher than what I'm more used to, or actually about 2 inches higher. And yeah, I went from like a 34 inseam down to about a 33. Because yeah, they do fit a little bit looser, including in the rise. But just the idea of like manufacturing your jeans, which are going to shrink a bit anyways, even though they're sanforized, with this idea that like no one's going to need that, you basically just kind of like impact your sales. So I mean, I think there's a lot of truth within brands making jeans quite long and then just cutting them to people's needs. So I guess just at the end of the day, they're just kind of missing out a bit on some sales.
Tellison, we used to stock them up to 40 inch leg, so like extreme. But yeah, it's very, very silly.
It's also like, I don't think they offer like a hemming service at collection. So like people would have to find someone. Maybe if you ask them, they would know someone, but it's not like a common thing at their store. So at least the Sydney store, because it's a very small shop. So I guess like you have it more often with collaboration pairs, because I think this was a Japan Blue or Pure Blue Japan collaboration, I think.
Yep.
And I remember like back in the days, Danny at Riven and I saying as well, like whenever we do, you know, do a collaboration, we usually go for a slightly more tapered fit because it just sells a lot better. So I assume because they've been around for a while, they know their market, so they probably can get away with a slightly shorter inseam, I guess.
Maybe all the ex-cons living in Australia are just like less well-nourished and are shorter people.
I mean, to be fair, I feel quite tall over here, and I'm not that tall at all, so it'll be hard for me going.
I think we've just lost I think we just lost about three of our Australian listeners.
All of them.
I tried to spin it as a joke about convicts and not modern
come back, guys.
Australia. So, but yeah.
Yeah, cool. That was it for me. Lex?
Cool. Thanks, Kevin. So what have I been up to? So basically, in the last podcast, I think I mentioned that my girlfriend and I were in the process of buying a house. And since then, we have bought it and moved in. So my life has basically in the last month been nonstop decorating and buying mid-century furniture online. So very unexciting. And I don't really have any other major interests at the moment, so mine will be quite a quick one, but that's it. But it's all really cool. The house is great. Nothing has gone wrong, but I'm just at the point where I've got no fingerprints left from hours and hours of sanding down wood and doing general DIY. But that's my life, so yeah, sorry, I have nothing of any interest, which isn't very good for when you're on a podcast. So I will quickly pass it on to Tom, who's last.
Just to make something up, Lex, just be like, oh yeah, I made a pair of 35-ounce overall boiler suits. Yeah, there you go.
Okay, all right. So yeah, I've other than making the 35-ounce boiler suits, which went actually, I've never sewn anything that heavy. The heaviest denim I've tried sewing is about 18-ounce. I have no idea how on earth when they make these ridiculously heavy jeans, how on earth they get it through a machine. They're just not, these old machines just aren't designed for that. So I've no idea how they kind of do 35, 40 ounce jeans, or also how you'd wear them. But anyway, yeah, getting distracted.
Cool. I've not been up to a lot. I have ordered a nice shirt, or hopefully nice, from Older Best, who are like the Chinese guys who do like Bronson and stuff like that. There was a really nice kind of indigo Coleco Western shirt on there. And I really like the fabric. It was, you know, Japanese fabric, but obviously made in China. So it'll be good to kind of see what their quality is like in terms of their construction. I ordered it like at the beginning of this month and it's still not here, so no idea what it's like yet, but I can let everyone know on the next episode. But yeah, it should be good because I need a few more Western shirts. And yeah, and then I have got like a couple of hundred pairs of socks coming soon, which that'll be fun to find where I can put that in my house before I sell.
Does that need colorway connection or
just for the brand? So restocking on the oranges and bringing in a green. So,
ooh, are we talking nice olive green, acid green?
It's like a mix of forest and mid green in like a marl pattern. So, ooh, should be quite tasty. I haven't actually seen a picture of them yet, but let's hope they're nice because there's a lot of them.
I guess if the toe socks. If we keep an eye on the United Overalls Co. Instagram, I assume we'll see him soon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They'll be on there soon. But yeah, that's really about it for me. Nothing else exciting. Nice.
Boy.
Anybody want to do a second round or should we jump into news?
I was just going to say, I've been listening to a few decent albums this month that I would recommend. First up, it only came out a few days ago, I think. Every Time I Die's new record, Radical, is really top-notch hardcore or metallic hardcore. Really good, fun album, and it's kind of on a par with all their other stuff. I after listening to the debut single, I was a bit concerned that they were going to go a more hard rock route. But no, they've kind of stuck to their guns. It's just they've kind of kept that influence in, which kind of has run throughout a lot of their records. And then the other one I've been listening to, and it's for a review that I'm kind of mid-writing, is Ward of Roses by a band called The Silver, who are quite new. They are, I think they kind of fall under the banner of post-black metal. It's weird. It's got elements of black metal in it, goth, doom. It's got a lot of clean vocals in there. It's quite a theatrical record. It's one that takes a few listens, bar one or two tracks to get into. But yeah, so far I'm quite liking that one as well. That's it.
Cool. I'll just do a super speedy one, kind of continuing my video game conversation series, to mention that I've paused my playing of Eastward to jump into Metroid Dread. So if anyone's ever played the Metroid games growing up, the new one, Metroid Dread, is on the Switch, and it is absolutely incredible. The combat is like mega, mega speedy. It's like a really, really fast playing game. You get all the classic power-ups you always expect in a Metroid game. It's still a side scroller, so like it's not like Metroid Prime where it's first person, but it's, you know, side scroller style. But yeah, it's just proof that those guys still are the masters of the Metroidvania genre. If anyone wants like a really fun, adventurous kind of action-packed shooter game, I give it a 10 out of 10. Cool. Anybody else want to add anything else, or should we jump into news?
Let's go for it.
Go for news.
Yeah, I've got an hour before I need to head.
All
right.
Obviously, I will just drop out like I normally do.
Cool.
That was my news jingle. Did you like it?
Yeah, it was good.
It was great.
Yeah, so let's all jump over to the news and see if there's anything that folks want to cover. I think we only have to cover what we want to.
Yeah.
One thing I will want to speak to, I guess, is Archival Clothing Company was like a classic sort of bag maker, maybe like kind of 2010-ish, maybe even a bit earlier. But they made these like really, really amazing canvas bags, super, super beefy, super tough, kind of like on the par of like a Filson, makesmanship wise. I bought one of their flap top bags years ago and still love it. They ended up eventually kind of like closing down their business and stopping making bags. But I've seen recently on Leslie Carson, who's one of the co-founders, Instagram, that her and her co-founder, or I forgot his name, are launching a new brand, which is basically just archival clothing with a new name called Handy Bags. And like they're about to bring back their Roll Top, which was like their best seller. They even did like an RGT collaboration Roll Top and denim at one point. But yeah, just anyone who wanted an archival bag, didn't get one, keep an eye out for Handy, because they're starting to make their bags again in small runs.
Cool. One I want to add, it wasn't in our list, but Ilya and I were talking about it yesterday, I think it was. Denim, the brand, are doing a collaboration with Pro Hunter, who are a Rolex customization brand, to do a small run of 21 custom watches, where they are, let's see if we can get it up on the Instagram, but they basically changed the arms on the clock. Yeah, it's a GMT, yeah. And one of the things they've done is they've changed the hands to be the denim scissors from the logo. And then they've done it in a all black in makeup. It's really, really nice watch. Obviously, being a Rolex, it's going to be absolutely ball-breakingly expensive.
Disgustingly expensive.
Yeah, but I mean, it's
also custom, right? So
yeah, so Pro Hunter, we were trying to work out what was going on, how Rolex would be involved in this and that. Pro Hunter, an independent business that custom Rolexes, right. They do a custom run. So we guess they just buy a number of Rolexes and then they customize them and then sell them on as a separate piece. So they do quite a lot of releases. No price. If you want to find out how much, if you reckon you could afford one of these and want to find out, you have to email them. It is very much pricing on request. But they are nice to look at. I don't think I would ever want to wear one because I'd be scared I'd break it. But yeah, that's my little piece.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting collaboration. Yeah, maybe it's an easier way to get a Rolex these days than from one of the outlets.
Oh, I don't know. I bet the waiting list. This is one of those ones you've got to be there nice and quick. Whereas, you know, Rolex in general, you often just get on a waiting list and then.
But you've got to be a pretty diehard fan of denim to buy a Rolex denim watch. That's like, you know.
I just don't think it makes sense because like a Rolex, it's all metal, is going to last you, you know, for generations, but denim won't last that long. So it feels like a weird kind of pairing of something that's meant to last and something that's not.
I don't know, because
it's the same kind of philosophy, right?
Other brands have done collaborations with watchmakers before. There's been a couple over the last few years. Was it Oslo? Oslo did one.
I know Momotaro did one.
Momotaro did one.
Yeah, Momotaro. Yeah, I mean, it's got a black carbon case. I'm just seeing, because I'm wondering maybe if the finish that has been added to it is designed to kind of, you know, almost be like crackle paint, but
of the case on the watch denim.
Yeah.
There's in the casing or something, in the box it comes in or...
Yeah, I think
the cogs are made from denim. When they wear out, that's it.
Yeah, it's a black. No, the case is carbon, so that probably won't chip away. So it's an interesting thing they've done. It'll be interesting to see kind of how well it sells. I mean, they've only got 21, so
21.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, it looks really nice though. But yeah, thinking about the price, I probably would pass on it.
Yeah, it's probably kind of the deposit on a small house.
Well, even if you are going to buy a Rolex watch, I think, you know, just get yourself a classic.
Get a Rolex, yeah.
Piece, which is not going to be tied into something. It's like, why have you got a denim Rolex? Maybe in 10 years' time. I don't know. I don't necessarily see the appeal of it. Yes, exactly.
I think there are some people who are like super into denim, though. So maybe it's just for those.
Yeah, I guess. I guess so. Maybe Jason just wanted them.
He just wanted one for himself.
He wanted his own Rolex,
He is the one of the 21.
Yes. Fair enough. When you know, if you can afford to do it, why not do it? Mm. So, should we move on to the next item, which is Standard and Strange have opened a store in New York.
I love it.
Which is quite a big power move for them. They've it's their third store. They've got one in Santa Fe, one in Oakland, and now they're in New York. So they've got a little bit of competition with some other stores, but I guess they've got, you know, their offering is quite probably quite different to, you know, your Self Edge and to the other stores in town. You've got Blue and Green. Just trying to think who else is there. I know you've got Left Field, which is more of a brand shop. Any others who are similar?
316 have a small store.
I think in LA.
Yeah. Okay.
No, New York as well.
Have they? Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they have one in New York as well, yeah.
Because wasn't
Andrew... Their shop in New York was like behind Self Edge.
Ah, right.
But they moved to a big fancy one that like, what's his name? Andrew did all the kind of like interior decorating and like mid-century design kind of influences. It got a bunch of press when they launched that shop.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Standard and Strange in New York. I believe Neil has moved to New York as well. So he'll be working from there for the time being. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. Maybe one day we'll find a Standard and Strange in Europe as well.
Who knows?
What one can hope. Probably not.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised.
I feel like you'd more likely see additional Rivet and Hyde locations before you'd see more Standard Strange jump the pond. I know one of their co-founders was British, but I'm not sure if that's the guy who's still with the brand, if he's still with the brand, Standard and Strange. When I went to their shop in Oakland many, many years ago, they had one of the co-founders was a UK transplant to the US. So who knows?
Okay.
Wouldn't surprise me indeed if Rivet and Hyde opened a shop somewhere on the mainland in Europe.
I think they might do like Edinburgh or Glasgow, somewhere like that first.
Yeah, I think they'll go up.
Yeah, right.
Higher.
Yeah, I know. Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, I know they've been like, not necessarily complaining, but like struggling with the whole Brexit situation with
who hasn't?
Taxes and
yeah, everyone has. Yeah. I mean, they're getting smashed with taxes, sending stuff over to the mainland,
customers.
And then we're getting smashed if we buy stuff from mainland firms.
It's crazy.
So yeah, we're kind of in a bit of a shitty situation.
But we got our blue passports at least, so.
Oh yeah.
Don't worry about Brexit, don't you?
Denim coloured passports.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I know. Danny and Junior first kind of started things off in Madrid. They both live there. So who knows, maybe they'd end up doing like a Rivet and Hyde Madrid to kind of serve the EU market better.
Fighting against the Red Cat heritage.
Are they Madrid as well?
Yeah, I think so.
Right.
I might be wrong. They might be Barcelona, but I've got a feeling they are Madrid.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. I think you're right.
Does Spain have much of a denim scene?
I was going to say, is it not better to have it in a colder climate? I think Holland's probably got too many shops. Germany's got too many shops already. So, like, where would you place your ideal shop in Europe?
Belgium, Antwerp is a pretty. They got a fashion university and stuff. So, but I don't know if they have
Paris. But that'd be extortionate. Maybe.
There's what you've got T-Bird in Paris and
but isn't that more of a vintage store?
I think they stock new stuff. I think Brute Archives does a little bit of both. They have their own lineup and vintage. And I think there's one other store which I can't remember right now.
Yeah, last time I was there, I went to V Barber and Son, which is kind of like a raw denim meets sort of like more kind of. Classic menswear shop, kind of French menswear. And then hunting around the other day, it looks like there's a new shop called Elevation Store, which I think recently opened, which carries all the sort of enthusiast brands. So that might be the new kind of like most serious denim shop, I guess you could say, in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good shout about Belgium. That might be a good spot.
Yeah, I love Antwerp. It's a really nice city to go to if you haven't been.
Danny, if you are listening and you do decide to move over there, please remember that it was this podcast that brought that idea to you. We do expect financial compensation.
Yeah, we'll be sending consultation fees.
At least 10% off.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just take some good art Hollywood stuff. I mean, I'm not asking for much. Did you guys cover the Ironheart Saunders pop-up last month?
Well, I think it's probably a good thing to bring it up. Is it not going to be live? I don't know. Is it going to be live for the
six? Yeah, because it will be. Yeah, it's next week.
Next week.
From where? So we are recording on Halloween. It goes live. Is it tomorrow? It goes live, doesn't it? The 1st to the 6th. Something like that.
Second to 7th, I think.
Okay, yes. So it's Tuesday to Sunday. So you might catch this episode while it's still running. That's up in jolly old London town. And they'll be putting on some of their fall winter 21 stuff on, and there'll be some other bits and bobs floating around, and there's a bit of a do on the Saturday, isn't there?
Correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning. I think some of us will be heading down. I'm not exactly sure who from the podcast, but some of the podcast folks will be down there for the event on the 6th, correct?
Yep, I'll be down there.
Yeah, hopefully I'll be down there.
I probably won't.
We can make like a cardboard cutout of you, Kevin, and just kind of like carry it around or something.
Just get a you never come to anything. Strap a tablet to it.
I'll send you a paper cut out of me. That's a pretty good idea. You can bring me along to all the meetups and stuff. Talking about meetups, actually, just a little shout out to one of our mates, Alex, or Yorkshire Denimal, on Instagram. I think he's organizing another denim and beers meetup up north on the 27th of November at Heist Brewery in Sheffield. So if anyone is in and around that area or wants to travel to Sheffield on the 27th of November, I would say hit him up. Yeah, it's always good to meet up with fellow denimheads. It's kind of like how we all know each other as well. So I always like to support anyone else who puts these kind of things out.
You're going to be at that one then, Kevin?
Yeah, well, it's a day before my birthday.
You've got no excuse.
Yeah. I think if I leave the country, they'll never let me in. So yeah. About that.
Why would you want to come here in November?
Oh, yeah, that as well. Forgot about that.
Where is flannels, mate?
Oh, that's true. Layers.
Mm.
Should we talk about the 316 news one?
Mm.
Go on, Tom. Start it off.
Drop that. Go, Tom.
Okay. So who brought this up? I think Ilya, did you tell me about this? 316 for some of their products are moving some of their production to India. Mm. Open floor, let's go.
They have already, in fact, moved a number of their products over to India. It looks like it's pretty much everything bar their jeans and a few other select pieces.
Yeah, that actually might. Yeah, it actually might not be too crazy. I know the factory they worked with in San Francisco is like a jeans-specific factory. I think it's even like an old Levi's production factory. Like, I think Tellison uses them. I think 316 uses them. So it could be an issue that like maybe they could only really do denim stuff, like heavyweight things. Like I know Black Horse Lane, for example, like Han doesn't really like to do like lightweight shirts or that kind of stuff. Paired with the fact that like, you know, Gitman Vintage, the shirting factory they use in Pennsylvania shut down. So I wonder if it could just be the case that there's nowhere good in the States to do the lightweight stuff.
I think it's a supply chain issue, having talked to a few people. The fact with COVID and everything like that, and with backlog of production, I think they've had to go and source production elsewhere. I think the only point, you know, we've discussed in this group and others have mentioned, is the price point has stayed the same for their shirting. And you know, is that because they want to make more profit, or is that because it's still, you know, the production costs are still the same? But I think maybe just a little bit of transparency on that mm-hmm. being quite good, and the communication on that. Perhaps
I think the added cost of shipping is going to have a huge impact. So I mean, it's been in the news. Like, you've got to think, if they're using shipping containers, they're not getting everything brought by air or land. The cost of a shipping container in the last year has gone up multiple times. So you're not, it used to be about $5,000, I think, about a year or two ago for a shipping container. Then it went up to about $9,000, beginning of kind of during the COVID crisis. And then now that you're kind of sitting at about $25,000 for a shipping container, which is a joke. But that's just because there's this supply issue. And so that's probably going to have a massive impact on their costs. And, you know, and a brand does need to make enough money to stay afloat. When that crisis ends, will we see a reduction in costs? Probably not, because it's a price point. It's a price point they've always had set for their shirts. They're the same quality, same standard. I think a lot of people won't be too bothered. And it will ultimately mean that 316 make a bit more profit off them. But yeah, I think some of it will be partially down to the issues with shipping.
Yeah, if anyone's interested, go ahead, Ilya. Sorry.
No. I was just going to break away a little bit and ask what you know you folks think about the price hike on the Ironheart Ultra heavy flannels, which have you know steadily been going up every year. I think we've now reached £320.
That's the Indigo only one. That's the Indigo dyed one. Yeah, the normal
that
got released at the same time is 290 something. But I mean, yeah, they had a lot of that was Brexit related. Brexit happened and pretty much Ironheart shirts went up by about £60.
But I think also they Ironheart did this thing of you know, no resellers were allowed to sell it to Europe from Japan. And because there was a you know, there's quite a difference between buying from Japan and then buying from a European retailer. Yeah. So they tried to standardize the pricing all around. So wherever you buy, you know, that shirt, it's going to be the same price. And no one is going to go and buy, you know, kind of undercut them from Japan. I just thought it was quite an interesting thing as well. Sorry, David, you were going to say something probably more relevant.
Yeah, I was just going to quickly mention that the New York Times did a great episode of their daily podcast, like 15th of October, called The Great Supply Chain Disruption. And I think that's the best description I've heard so far of what all's happening. So I've kind of seen different hints of it in different hobbies and stuff. But yeah, I think that's a good one to listen to if people want to kind of get the official word. It was from the port manager of the port of Savannah, Georgia, that they interviewed. So good one to listen to. So today's discussion topic is about the fact that it's denim season. Yay! So essentially it's fall. It's officially fall if you're in the States or autumn if you're in the Commonwealth. And time to talk about the best time of year for denim. So I wanted to give a quick shout out to I Love Eggs and Chips, which is an Instagram friend of ours who often sends us questions and pretty much inspired this episode this discussion topic with a question he sent over. So a shout out there. I guess to kick things off, what are folks excited to start wearing this season?
More than like two layers. I'd like to get my Buzzricks and William Gibson jacket out. Can't wait to wear it.
Fancy.
Yeah, it does need a bit of dry cleaning. It's a bit musty, or it's been in the wardrobe for a bit. But and then multiple layers, waistcoats, chore coat on a chore coat. You know, the usual. Living my farmer/railroad worker/cowboy life.
Anyone going down the Rudy route with denim on denim?
What, four pairs of jeans?
Denim underwear.
I will say my favorite thing about the pandemic and working from home is I can basically wear double denim every day and no one says anything.
You get a lot of comments on it then, eh?
No one can judge me on Zoom.
Oh man, anytime I've ever worn double denim to like an office environment, someone's commented on it. Hey, nice Canadian tuxedo, buddy.
Well, actually, it's Japanese. I often go into, like, it's now a thing at my work that everyone's like, oh, I'm going to go dressed as you for Halloween, just wear double denim. I'm like, hey. Thank you.
I always make a point when term starts for the first few days of term of wearing double denim in just to get it out of the way so they know, everyone knows I'm the guy that'll be walking around university head to toe in denim. And it gets it out of the way, clears the air. They know what they're going to.
Make sure they know your scent before you surprise anyone with dirty denim smells around the office.
Fresh denim, of course, not some skanky old thing that hasn't been washed.
See, I don't have any of that actually because I'm full on business casual.
You're back in the office now.
Yeah, mate.
Back in the office and back in the suits.
Yes. No, we're not suits, luckily. It's suit shirts and like chinos or smart trousers. Mm. So it's not too stuffy. Going from.
Has it always been like that? Or is this like post COVID? Yeah,
in the office, yeah, but during lockdown, I was sat at home in my pants.
No, but I mean, like pre-COVID, did you have to wear suits?
Yeah, it was. So we have a dress down Friday, and that's it, which is quite common around the city. People are hoping that maybe the firm relaxes its dress code a little bit more, because maybe not, but kind of like other firms within the city are relaxing theirs. Some of the big banks have done it recently. So we're hoping maybe that'll happen for us. Probably won't. But just having to deal with it. That and 5:30 wake ups.
And which jacket are you looking forward to wearing, Andy?
Oh mate, the Ironheart deck jacket. Obvs. It's still too warm. Still not cold enough for it.
Yeah.
I think I tried it once and then took it off because it's that thing is built for like snowstorms.
Another like 10 degrees down.
I was looking forward to wearing my Filson, but I'm actually gonna offload that because it is too small for me now.
What jacket is it?
It is the Mackinaw Cruiser. Small because they are big. And I'm now just too broad for it. So if anyone wants one, just hit me up on Instagram and I will sell it for a very good price.
Too much pumping iron, eh?
And then eating treats. Lots of treats.
Anybody else? Stuff you're stoked to break in this autumn?
Oh, guess I'll go ahead. I earlier in the year I managed to track down a Mr. Freedom hook deck jacket in dark navy, which is blanket lined. So I'm looking forward to wearing that more. I've only been able to wear it when I'm on the motorcycle so far, because it is quite warm. But I am looking forward to breaking that out properly and wearing it because it'll be good both for the cold and for the rain, which is kind of what we'll have in London for most of the fall and winter. I'm looking forward to getting that out.
One thing. I just had a brain fart. Never mind.
I was gonna say, you said it's good for the rain. Is that deck jacket waxed in any way? Like some are.
So it's a jungle cloth as well, which is quite I found is really good against the rain. I think there is some waxiness or kind of in the fabric. It feels like it.
I know they do some of their. I know Buzz do some of their deck jackets in, is it Demotex?
Demotex, yeah.
It's meant to be a bit more resistant.
Yeah, I don't think this is the Demotex version. It's made by Sugarcane, which is Toyo Enterprise, so it's part of the same, you know, umbrella. But one interesting thing is this jacket does have an inner layer, which is between the jungle cloth and the blanket lining. Which is very, it's a waxed fabric, and it's supposed to be really good against the wind. Obviously, it doesn't help on the outer shell because it's internal. But yeah, so there is another layer in between there, and it's very crinkly sounding at the moment. So yeah, it's not waxed, but I think it does have some kind of finish on it.
Cool.
What about you, David? What jacket are you looking forward to wearing?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a weird one here in that pretty much all winter I just wear Gore-Tex. I'm a bit of an Arc'teryx fanboy and always have been. So like usually for me in winter it's like a one of their puffies with a shell over the top. Now that said, if I was able to like pick something up new, I used to have a really nice wool pea coat that I no longer have it. Long story, but yeah, I've always kind of wanted to replace and get like a new pea coat. So I've got a little bit of my eyes on that Shot 32 ounce navy wool pea coat, but I doubt I'll end up buying it just because I don't know. I pretty much get by with just Gore-Tex and a down jacket.
Yeah. I had my eye on that pea coat as well, but I think my size sold out immediately.
So, yeah, another brand to look at. I don't know if they've got anything good right now, but Golden Bear in California makes some really nice pea coats, and they've been around for 100 some odd years, whatever. They could be worth a look because they do some really heavy stuff, and a lot of nice companies will often do collabs with them, and they're made in San Francisco.
I'll have to have a look at eBay to see what's floating around in the military section, because you can usually pick up a U.S. Navy pea coat for quite a decent price. Just remove, if necessary, remove the patches.
There's also quite a lot in the vintage shops in London, so that you can have a look. I don't know whether you've been to Pop Boutique in Covent Garden, which is quite good. It's not one of the most known places, but it does have some really nice bits for both men and women. So, and they usually have quite a few US pea coats. So,
oh, cool.
But it's just with that, it's finding the sizing, because the sizing is usually on the smaller side. But otherwise, the Bosrixum one always looks like a good option.
Yeah, I love all their William Gibson, quote unquote, black pieces they do.
They're beautiful with all the leather trimming and, they're good.
Gonna be gonna need something like that for the Facebook metaverse. One thing I did acquire for winter, but I don't know if I actually get to wear it or not, is I picked up a secondhand pair of Vibergs off of Grailed recently. So they did a boondocker with a Milo shop in Canada, and it's kind of rough out boondocker, but it's like an olive green. Rough out as opposed to like the normal kind of tan, whatchamacallit. And it's at my folks' house in the States. I got them for about half price, which is pretty cool. But I don't know if I'll get them over here in the UK in time to wear for winter.
They're nice.
Please, can you put neon laces on them?
No. They gotta stay exactly as they are. They're perfect.
Those are nice.
Yeah, I've always wanted some boondockers. And almost got the ones that Riven Hides got on the 2030, but I saw this color and I was like, oh man, when am I going to find another cool green boot?
Mm. I'm liking the corded sole as well.
Yeah, they got Dr. Soles on them.
Fits on it.
That's going to be really nice. I'm still after some kind of boondocker at some point.
I tell you, I definitely have found some good deals here and there, both on primarily on Grailed, but also a bit on eBay too. So like keep an eye on those websites.
Oh yeah, I'm always on there having a look. That's where I catch most of my bargains, and Marked is also a good option. I mean, you can find some, Lofgren's for 200 quid, as my friend Miko found, like almost brand new. And Brass Tokyo clinch boots on there for like silly money. So yeah, it's definitely good to have a look on the secondhand market, and it's just also a good way to reuse and people, you know, stuff people don't want, rather than going buying new stuff all the time. So
is it not pronounced market, like Mark KT market?
Possibly, but they didn't put an E. They didn't put an E, so I'm calling it marked.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Screw them.
Bad branding.
Guys.
I guess market.com was already taken, so.
Yeah.
Seems so. They did a sample sale of Fireberg as well, not too long ago.
Didn't really you pick good, something up really from them, thing. David?
No. I looked on there, but like I literally got these about the same weekend for a better price. And so I was like looking at some stuff, but now I ended up going with these instead. They've just been sitting in my family's house forever. That said, I'm a bit bummed that it wasn't possible to get the Division Road ones. They did a black version of the service boot.
Those were nice.
A Boondocker. Yeah, yeah, but it was years ago.
Yeah, I remember wanting those at the same time I wanted the Black Cats from John Lofgren.
Tough choice.
Yeah, the Black Cats sold out. So, you know, I was too late for that. And then I kind of just held off and didn't get anything for a while. So, but yeah, I like that makeup as well that they did in the black rough out.
Yeah, they're dope. cool. Anybody else have stuff they're stoked to wear this winter? Should we move on to next thoughts?
Well, I'm waiting to see what I get for my birthday. Which is very shortly.
And what is he hoping for?
I know something has come from Redcast Heritage. That's all I know.
Nice.
I have a rough idea what it may be. I will be able to talk about it more at the next podcast.
You put your legs in it.
I'm not saying anything.
Remind me what day yours is again?
So, it's the 5th of November. It's bonfire night.
Ah, yeah, that's right.
So I'll be looking forward to that. Other winter stuff. I mean, I've got some. I mean, it's getting to the point, kind of fall and winter, perfect time to pull out the woolly pullies for the cold. So I've got a couple of sweaters from Peregrine that are perfect for the weather. Who have also just They've just been added to Clutch Cafe's roster. So,
was it Clutch or Son of a Stag?
I thought it was Clutch. It might be Son of a Stag. Let's Google.
Big shout out to.
Yeah, actually, it is Son of a Stag. Because I think Clutch got.
Colhaze and Malix.
Colhaze, yeah.
Yeah, big shout out to Peregrine. They. I met their founder a while back, and it's like a family-owned business. Has been growing their wool in the UK, making their sweaters in the UK for generations. Really nice product for a good price.
There's a couple of brands who are kind of coming to the fore that do it. I know Ilya's dealt with it. Stag. The shirting.
Hearn clothing.
I think the shirt was called the Stag, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. The shirt is the Stag. Yeah. The company's Hearn Clothing, and yeah, they're all kind of British. You know, I think they own a sheep farm where they collect wool and everything and make it all kind of based here. Kind of very inspired by Filson in terms of design, and yeah, it's really hearty stuff. Same kind of weight as the ultra heavy flannel shirts. Probably more affordable price, I would say. Obviously not as complex in terms of yarn design and all the all the stuff that goes into our Ironheart shirt, but definitely a good alternative if someone wants to support a local company. And talking about sweaters, I'll be looking forward to grabbing my mum's one out that she made for me from Ikra Alpaca. Once it gets a little bit colder, it's been sitting there waiting for me patiently, for the cold to come out again. So yeah, that'll be another nice thing to throw on this year.
What color is it?
Ecru. It's an Ecru.
Ah, right.
So yeah, it's kind of
nice.
I asked her to make something based on a kind of Submariner roll neck So I kind of just picked and choose a few elements from them, you know, from classic styles and other brands that, you know, I quite like. And she really made a stunning piece. So it's something I'd love to offer to people, but unfortunately it just takes too long to make.
That sounds like that would be a pretty cool keepsake.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's something that, you know, hopefully one day I can pass son and or my daughter.
And while we're
grow to my size.
And while we're all looking forward to wearing cold weather gear, a sweat patch. I know Kevin will probably be looking forward to whacking out the Speedos.
Exactly.
And getting on the beach, slathered up in.
So Kevin, maybe you can say what you have been wearing over winter, what you were wearing over winter in the warmer climates of, you know, where you are living.
Like it is all very much like I would say like probably like what you would wear in spring. So just like denim jacket every now and then, on top of a t-shirt or a shirt. I bought a Knickerbocker sweatshirt, which I wore quite a bit. Like I've never really been like a sweatshirt or jumper kind of person, but like working from home, it's just so much easier to just, you know, pull a jumper on instead of like, putting a shirt on or anything like that. So, that's probably like has been my main go-to this winter. It hasn't been that cold, but also because we work from home through winter, like we didn't really have to go out that much. But I do have my leather jacket here as well, which I've worn in previous winters every now and then. If it gets below 20 degrees, you know, then you put your leather jacket on.
Which one do you have, Kevin?
I've got a Scotch and Soda, nice. Like a biker jacket. It's really nice, like burgundy lining on the inside.
The black.
Yes, black leather.
Yeah. Nice.
I love a jacket. Unfortunately, again, like one of those things that I can't really wear too much here. It was one of the last purchases I made back in the Netherlands before I moved to London, which was like kind of like my own like leaving gift to myself, or maybe even like a gift of like accomplishment of like, you know, having finalized the move to London. I was like, let's splash some cash and buy a nice leather jacket. So I've had it for about 2012, it's like 9 years now or so. It's just been pretty nice. But like in terms of like things that I would look forward to again, like I would like to buy a new pair of boots. I've been looking at Moktoes, which very often you fall back on Red Wing, but I've tried to like steer away from Red Wing. We've had this discussion before already. But it's hard. I've like white boots have pretty nice Moktoes, who I've just found out Urahara or Godspeed store here in Melbourne now are stockers of them, so maybe I'll go and have a look there next winter. And Truman, they do quite nice Moktoes as well, but they don't have many of them. So you have to like be really on top of, you know, what leathers they come out with and stuff like that. So there's not really a standard one that they have. So, again, that's probably either something for like next winter or maybe even only when we get back to Europe at some point. And then the other thing I really want to buy still at some point is a mountain parka. So probably the one from, I don't know if you've seen the movie The Deer Hunter. He wears like an orange mountain parka in that movie from Holubar, I think the brand is called. And absolutely love that jacket. So that's still on my list as well. But yeah, again, I can't really wear it here, so not really investing too much at the moment in that. But One day.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning too that both Grant Stone does their brass boot and Alden does their indie boot for good Mach 2 styles as well. They're definitely worth looking at.
Yeah, cool. I'll have a look at that.
And if you want to go custom, then Flame Panda's your man, because I think he makes probably one of the best Mach 2s out there. And then you've got the option of choosing your leather and all that fun stuff.
You wouldn't get it for this winter, though.
Well, it, I think the waiting list. Well, yeah, it won't be his winter, but it'll be Kevin's winter.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is
another, you know, one.
Yeah.
Another one is Santalum in Indonesia. They do a boot that looks almost exactly the same as an indie boot. I forgot what they call it, but it's like their version of an indie boot. And you can get them with like Dr. Souls, all kinds of really good stuff on it. And then, since it's made in Indonesia, it's probably a pretty good price.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Santalum will be a little bit cheaper than the Flame Panda one.
But yeah, there's some good Indonesian bootmakers out there, I have definitely to say. Yeah. Yeah. Oh well. I won't invest in them now, so I've got time to research, which is good.
Cool. I guess moving the conversation forward a bit. Anyone want to talk a bit about advice for like how to look after your stuff when it's either either raining or snowing? Any kind of advice for folks?
I think this is something that Tom would be a good person to tackle in terms of boots, especially since he's got quite a good experience with that.
Yeah, I mean, don't go near salt if it's snowing, because that shit rots your boots. Just make sure you're kind of cleaning. Not every time you go out, but if it's like you have trekked through some like knee-high mud and your boots are a little bit filthy, then, you know, give them a scrub down. You don't necessarily need to oil them or treat them every single time, because the boot itself is going to retain a lot of that kind of whatever you're using in terms of oils or other leather treatments. You know, you maybe want to, again, if you're going out in extreme dirt or water or snow, you know, every 3 or 4 times, which, you know, if you're wearing them once a week, you know, that's, you know, at the end of the month, something like that. In terms of other clothes, denim, just wear it. Don't think too much about it. That's about it, really, unless I've missed something. What have I missed?
And then when you're drying, I think one aspect, you know, never put it in front of a heater or never put it in front of a fireplace. Just let it dry out naturally. Put some, you know, either newspaper inside the boot if you wanted to get them dried up, or,
Shoe trees.
That's the one I was looking for.
I leave mine out in the hallway in our flat just because it's like,
yeah,
not
just
too warm, not too cold. It can just dry out in its own time.
Exactly. That's a good way of doing it, where there's a little bit of fresh air coming in as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I said, just wipe them down every now and again. I was away for a week in Poland where it rained a lot, and I took my Wax Flesh boots, which are very low maintenance, by the way. You don't really have to do anything to them apart from, you know, wipe them down, brush off the dirt, and, you know, let them dry out, and they're ready to go again. Don't over condition your boots, like Tom said. You don't have to oil them too many times, as you know, a lot of the leathers have that oil already impermeated within the leather. But,
yeah, even if you can't see it like on the top surface layer, you know, it is still kind of, you know, soaked in through
the main body of it. And if you, you know, get yourself a good brush, horsehair brush, brush it down, warm up the leather, and that will come up to the surface. So if you've got any scuffs or nicks, that usually you can brush those out. And just give them, don't wear them day in, day out. Do swap them out with other pairs, if you do have another pair. And in terms of clothing, you know, if just let them get dry properly. Again, the same thing before, you know, wearing them again. I don't know what else that you'd like.
If they get muddy, you are allowed to wash your jeans.
Yes, definitely wash your jeans if they get dirty.
Because nobody wants to smell that the next day.
No.
Yeah.
Clean your cuffs. Unroll your cuffs. Brush them out.
Yeah, definitely.
And then pose for a photo. Do a cuff check.
Yeah, it's pretty much impossible, I think, to get through winter without like getting mud splash up on the back of your jeans. It feels like walking around town in boots. It's like inevitable that you come home and you've got like mud splash and all kinds of gross shit flung up on the back of your jeans. I know once I'll often wash my jeans more common in winter or more frequent in winter to kind of like deal with that problem. And usually because it's too cold to dry them outside, you know, I'll put them in front of the radiator on like on a clothes rack. But I will mention that on one pair, I let the leather patch get too close to the radiator. And the patch actually like dried out and cracked, and it just ruined the patch. I had to cut it off.
So you've definitely had some bad experiences with leather patches, haven't you, David?
Yeah. So the one pair was the radiator thing. Another pair was the boiling water thing. So yeah, I just don't do well with skincare, let's call it. I think if you're drying your jeans on a rack in front of a radiator indoors, make
sure
you
put.
How do you feel, how do you feel? Like, okay, so you've gone out, it's muddy, and the bottom of your jeans are muddy, but the rest of your jeans are clean. Would you only clean the bottom parts of your jean, especially since the bottom parts don't usually fade that as much as the, you know, the top half? Or would you just if you've just got mud spots on the back of your calves?
Probably just brush
it off. I find it dries like on the surface, so you can brush it off most of the time once it is fully dry.
But I mean, like if I did like what my son did yesterday and fall head first into a puddle, then yeah, the jeans are going straight in the wash. You're not going to brush that off. I mean, you hear people on the groups being like, "Oh, I once poured a pint of beer down my jeans and didn't wash them. It was fine.
Still in there.
It fucking wasn't.
Stinky liquids.
You now smell of like a really shit brewery. It's just common sense, and a little bit of dirt here and there. Just brush it off or spot clean. If it's filth or it's covered in whatever it is, you just stick it in a wash.
If you're starting to look like a hobo, then or smell. One of the senses.
And if someone ever says, "Oh, don't baby your jeans," well, they're being an idiot. Yeah, just wash them.
Yeah,
it feels like a lot of it depends upon kind of where you get the muck on them. If it's like city muck, like you got to wash those jeans. It's probably like spit, beer, car gasoline, just all kinds of like city shit. But if it's like, I don't know, you're walking around in a park and it's just kind of nature muck, it's probably less of a big deal.
Yeah. Lex, got any additional stuff?
I guess the issue I have in winter is cycling, because I cycle everywhere. So again, I get the same issue, just getting shit all over my jeans. But again, I agree with, if it's London muck, you can't really do anything other than wash it, you know. No one wants to be walking around just covered in all the crap that you get from London streets.
That's why you don't wear cycling leggings. And then wear them in work as well afterwards.
No. The thing is, actually, I might, because with this new move, I used to just be 5 minutes from work. So like the bike ride, you know, barely even break a sweat. Whereas now I've moved, I've got like a 45-minute bike ride, which if you guys have ever tried cycling 45 minutes in raw denim, it's not particularly comfortable in certain parts of your body. So I might have to just have a pair of jeans that I keep at work. Keep them clean, keep them nice, and then go in full lycra, middle-aged man in lycra.
There is an alternative. So I've had a pair of these Outlier Slim Dungarees for probably like 5 or 6 years now. They're basically a five pocket jean cut, but they're made out of like a shoulder technical fabric. And what I do is I cycle commute in those. So when I was still living in London, I rode them every day for an entire winter, you know, 30 minutes each way from like Walthamstow to Shoreditch. And they look just like you're wearing a pair of black jeans. They're super indestructible. Like they don't tear anything like that from your saddle. Super easy to wash them. And I just would swap into jeans when I got to the office. So I'd like leave a pair of jeans at work and I just cycle in these dudes. They're built like a tank and they look like you're wearing a pair of jeans.
Okay, that's a good call. I might have to get myself a pair of them because, yeah. As I said, cycling 45 minutes in raw denim is not a good idea.
Yeah, and they've got like gusseted crotches and they've got everything. They're like they're designed for cycling. Cool. When Outlier started, they were basically trying to make clothes for cyclists that you could like quote unquote wear into the boardroom when you got to the office, and they're fantastic.
Cool. Problem solved. Yeah, the other thing I guess I'll mention is obviously coming into winter, my plan is to buy a new plaid shirt, which I kind of tend to do, a new flannel at this time of year. So I might, when we go to the Sunderson pop-up next week, consider splashing out on an Ironheart pair, or an Ironheart shirt. But we'll see how that goes. I don't know if I can bring myself to spend quite that much money on a shirt.
I'm going to have a look at those Suavis flannels that Rivet and Hyde are going to stock for about a month.
Oh yeah, they look really nice.
Yeah, I'll be popping in on Friday.
Yeah, so, I had a look at them. Know. Quite nice.
Yeah, they're only available in the stores and not on their web store because it's literally just a short run pop up. I'm hoping that they're doing it to see if it's successful enough for them to make it one of their new core brands. Whereas they were quite, I know they've just introduced Samurai, but they did that almost on the quiet. I didn't really see any fanfare about that, which was surprising. Hopefully if Suavis pick up, then or they do well over this month, that'll be a new core brand. But I'll let you know if their shirts are worth a look at for kind of a heavyweight winter piece.
Do you know what their price points are?
No, I'll let you know what the price point is as well when I go in, because they've kept it quite quiet. I mean, you'll probably have to go off what Selfedge is selling them for over in the States.
I think it
maybe.
Was the just above 200 mark, if that's
not
right.
Too bad.
Nice.
So kind of like that. So that's what a site sub Rogue Territory price is kind of.
Yeah.
Like, Uus?
I think Uus, if I remember kind of, stuff my head.
But yeah, quite liking those. When I pop in,
I'm quite liking those UES sweatshirts they just got in as well.
Oh, the Pecaro ones.
No, it's like a UES loop wheeled sweatshirt. They have a black and a
I think it's Pecaro cotton or something
Peruvian
like that.
One.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah.
You were mentioning, Tom, that you had a.
Yeah. It's like I felt it, and it didn't feel as much different as any of the other jumpers, and it definitely wasn't as soft as like a warehouse sweat. So not sure if it gets a lot softer as you kind of wash it and stuff, but didn't seem like particularly outstanding to me. But
yeah, we were chatting about this, and I think, you know, warehouse and SDA do really nice soft hand sweatshirts, especially
I've got
side.
SDA, I've got a Kakishibu dyed one coming up very shortly. Mm. I think it's out already in Japan.
Oh, that sounds good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, the US appeal is the fit and the kind of aesthetic. You know, they're like really good for like slim, tall people.
I don't like the kind of side panels, though. Levi's always done that. And then it's like, oh, these are loop wheel. It's like, yeah, but then why put side panels in it?
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah.
But that's just a personal preference thing for me. But. Yeah, and I love the UAS stuff. Wasn't like, oh my god, this is amazing, I need to buy this.
And the price point was quite high as well, wasn't it? Versus
ooh,
other.
Yeah.
I've got one of their sweatshirts. I don't think it's not a Pecaro cotton one, but it's pretty solid.
Yeah,
not,
it's just
not
the,
to be
the Pecaro ones are just more expensive than the standard sweatshirts. That's why, because it was, how much was it, Tom? Was it like 200 or 190 or something like that?
185.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, not like, to play, then you can get a warehouse for like 140, 120, something like that. So.
Not to play devil's advocate or anything, but you know, I've never heard of a sparrow cotton before, from Puka Pakura, whatever it is. And it's like, who knows if that's like actually something better or if it's just marketing.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe they should have done like a bit of an explanation of or the back story of the cotton, or you know, some kind of reasoning as to, you know, a slightly different price point for it. But yeah, who knows?
Yeah, I think those side panels, now that I see them, are probably actually a deal breaker. So they might as well just put like JNCO style racing stripes down the side.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's to get like a slightly different fit, you know, because Luke Burlett's like always going to be boxy. Yeah, who knows?
Cool. Any more on the discussion topic folks want to go into, or should we knock out a couple quick Q&As, or do folks need to drop at the hour?
Might as well get started on the questions. I'll have to drop in the next few minutes.
Cool. You want to pick one? I guess, yeah, let's jump into Q&A then. And Andy, do you want to pick one to start off?
Yeah, let's bring up the old Trello. This is where I immediately pick a question that we've already covered.
Maybe you should go for the first one.
Straight for the top one.
Yes.
From, Raw Denim, well done. This is an amazing thing because none of us seem to... We all have been ignored on this, and I'm actually a little bit disappointed.
Yeah,
how about talking about these guys who DM wanting to wear and sniff old faded jeans? Now, I mean, there are some interesting fetishes out there. I mean, there's ones with people obsessed with stinky trainers and various bits and bobs. So, I mean, it's unsurprising that some people want to sniff farty old jeans.
I almost want to call bullshit on it, and I'm not sure I believe it's real, unless maybe they're all like minions who work for Rudy for the Faded Museum.
The internet's a weird place.
Yeah, and like there was I don't know if it's still a thing anymore, but kind of if you ever see like a film like Cruising with Al Pacino, there was the heavy leather scene within like kind of the New York gay scene and like in San Francisco and stuff like that. Yeah. And that was all about wearing biker gear and dressing and construction gear and like denim and stuff like that. And one of the kind of things you'd hear about is like, you know, there's a photo floating around of like a dress code for one of the clubs. And it was very much like no aftershave, no deodorant, no that kind of stuff. You know, it's a sweaty place. So there is that kind of, maybe it's linked to that, maybe there's that kind of musk element that, you know, some people get off on.
Can I just say I feel very offended that no one has asked me for any of my old jeans that they want to sniff. So the offer's out there.
None of us have been asked, though, by the sound of it. I am genuinely upset that no one feels that our jeans would have the right musk.
They're not after the British musk.
We're posers. We don't actually live out in the woods or wear ours in construction or anything like that.
I need to start taking some Insta reels of like chopping wood topless.
Yeah.
I'll definitely say
like the commando opening montage.
One thing that definitely threw me off moving here is the percentage of people who kind of like day to day go around with clothes that weren't dried correctly. So you get that kind of like dank, musty, moldy type smell. I guess just some people. Yeah, I guess just some people don't have like good enough drying at home, you know, because of the climate. But yeah, I'll be in the office and someone's like, whoa, their clothes are musty or moldy, whatever you want to call it. So maybe that's why it's not so prevalent here.
Yeah, I've got at least like three pairs of jeans that, you know, if you want to hit me up.
One more one. Stink.
Yes. They're well matured, a good vintage.
Anybody keen to grab another?
Yeah, let's do the next one. From Gray.
Go on.
Yeah. Okay. So from Gray Gramercy. Advice for guys who are just starting to build their wardrobe. I mean,
don't go mad straight away.
Yeah, I think like we talked about this in one of our first episodes.
25 ounce, no joking.
Unsat price, size down twice.
Absolutely. And then wear them, sit in the bathtub, fill it up with water, walk around the house. Never wash them.
Roll in the ocean.
I think we did cover this, didn't we? And I think we said, you know, buy a good pair of jeans, buy a Henley, you know, buy a
get your
sweatshirt.
Foundation stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, get your foundations.
And work out your budget. Don't be drawn into buying an expensive brand just because it's seen as a cool brand. Work out if it's actually a viable thing and is it even worth spending such a large amount of money onto something that you actually might not particularly want enjoy wearing, or it might be something that shortly down the line isn't part, you realize isn't actually part of your, or shouldn't really be part of your wardrobe.
Experiment with fits as well, because you don't want to like buy 5 or 6 pairs of like slim cut and then be like, oh no, actually I prefer loose cut, and then you know you've got 5 brand new pairs of slim jeans that you're not ever going to wear.
But possibly add buying things secondhand, because a lot of the clothes we buy are so expensive. And I know personally I can't afford that much. And as you said, you don't want to be buying stuff and then realizing it's not quite your style. But if you buy something secondhand on eBay, wear it for 6 months, realize maybe it's not quite for you. You can probably sell it for a similar amount and get most of your money back. It's a good way of experimenting with the type of clothes that you may or may not like.
Agreed.
One thing I'll throw in there too is the whole like one blue pair of jeans, one black pair of jeans is kind of all you need to get going, potentially. And that way you've got some options. And then also, I feel like a lot of people get stung by the like sizing down too much on a first pair, because you hear like, oh yeah, you got to size down to buy raw denim. So go down one size, go down two size, whatever. And then like your first pair just ends up never breaking in enough. So I'd almost say like to start with, either buy a pair that like, maybe slightly snug when you button them, or they're kind of just right fitted. But when people say, oh yeah, it should be hard to button the top button, I'm not so sure that's a good place to start if you're new to the hobby, because you'll just buy jeans that are too small and you won't like them.
Especially if you've come from stretch.
Yeah.
or if you want kids in the future.
Yeah, and also like people's weights fluctuate, right? Like some people go up a whole size over winter and then back down a size over summer. So it's like, yeah, I think kind of sizing comfortable for your first pair. Don't try and get talked into going small.
Yeah, and I would always recommend to anyone coming into the scene, like I recommend going into a store and actually talking to someone who knows stuff about it. Like, you know, if you live in London, go to Riven and Hyde or Son of a Stag, or because you know the guys in the store there, or ladies in the store there, they know what they're talking about, right? So they can always give you advice on what you're trying on, you know, if it does indeed shrink or stretch out or that kind of stuff. So
one anecdote I'll say to that though is I think twice now I've gone into a shop, I won't mention which shop or shops, and they kind of actually talked me into that whole like top button barely buttonable thing, and I ended up buying jeans that like didn't fit and had to sell them. So I think trust the shops, but if they're kind of pushing you into a zone of comfort that you're like, I'm not so sure this feels right, like err on the bigger size, because the shop that kind of stung me was like a very, very reputable shop that a lot of folks like, and I basically wasted £250.
Maybe we should offer a personal shopper service to people in London. We'll come into the shop with them. Watch
they can sniff your jeans while they're at it.
Yeah.
Sniff your jeans. Sniff as a call. We'll send Tom with you. All right. Moving on to the next question.
Cool. This one's from Discord. Do we know who from Discord or?
Number 12, so username.
Oh, okay, cool. I was just thought it was the 12th question. I was just like,
no.
That's handy. You don't have to be a cowboy to wear jeans. You do need to work construction to pull off hard hats and neon vest. Where does military style fit in between the two ends of the spectrum? Go on, Ilya.
I think like anything, you can wear what you want. You don't have to be a soldier to wear, you know, ex-military kit, just like you don't have to be a cowboy to wear a cowboy hat. at the end of the day, it's just styling. A lot of clothes which are in shops are inspired by military clothing anyway, more than you would expect. Anything from shirting, from jackets, you know, boots are have their foundations in a lot of military or sportswear. So why not, you know, wear it? Just the same way you're not a basketball player, but you can wear, you know, Jordans. So it's the same principle. Also, you know, there were movements in the 60s, 70s where people would wear ex-military clothing as a way of protesting against war, as a peace thing. So I wouldn't get too hung up about it. But some people might be slightly against it, or, you know, might not agree with it, or might not want to wear military because they have the association with it being, you know, something to do with war or that. And that's fine if that's how you feel. But at the same time, I think you should feel comfortable, you know, wearing a M65 jacket if that's your thing. But it can get into a cosplay if you're going, you know, too far into it as well. So I think it all depends on context and how you wear it, and, you know, and your reasoning for it too. So yeah, I think it's just another element of style, and just another choice that you have when picking out products and garments. I don't know if anybody else wants to chime in on that.
Yeah, I mean, so much of, like, you know, stuff that is just normal kind of fashion is military pieces, you know, like bomber jackets and field jackets and, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, it depends how much you want to kind of commit to it, because, you know, there are people who will wear, you know, like World War II chinos, B-10 jacket, you know, A3 cap. Oh, there you are, Elliot.
Wait, stop calling me out.
So I think it's almost like its own spectrum of, you know, you can either mix it in with stuff that's, you know, a little bit either casual or dressy, or, you know, it can very easily just be folded into kind of your day-to-day stuff.
And I haven't watched the TV series yet, but I know there was that documentary about Vietnam, that the Vietnam War, that was like a huge, well-lauded TV series. But I think, if I remember correctly, in the kind of late 60s, early 70s, military wear was also used for, like, protests, right? So, like, kind of anti-war protests, people would wear.
That's what I said before. I
don't know where you just missed it.
Shit. I was on a pee break. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I mentioned that it was a way, you know, as a protest. But yeah, it's a very good point.
Oh, I'll edit that out. My bad.
But even before that, you know, when you had after World War II, kind of the G.I. Joes and stuff coming home, and they would wear all their gear. And that's how kind of all the biker gangs started and stuff. You know, they were wearing old flight jackets and rocking around on their Harleys and stuff. So, you know, it always kind of, you know, after that period.
And that's the beauty of these things, is that they are, you know, they are hardy. They are rugged, as some people like to describe it. And they're durable, and they, you know, they are good for these kind of things and activities like being on the bike. And, you know, this is one of the reasons I love this type of clothing, because it looks great, it's durable, and it's also, it protects you from the elements. And why not do that and, you know, look stylish, if I say so myself, when these people do it. So yeah, it's a very stylish, functional piece, and yeah, do what you want. So
okay, well, the next question up is one that I can't answer, but let's do it anyway, because I think Ilya's got experience with this. It says, I'm thinking of waxing my Swedish M59 jacket. Any advice on the best way to do it? Ilya, you've tried waxing your jackets before, haven't you? How did that go?
I've waxed several items, including bags, hats, jackets. It's very, very simple from my experience. And just lay the jacket out on some newspapers to protect, you know, the flooring. Get yourself some wax, whether it's from Barber, Filson, or Otter. I think the Otter bar is quite easy, because you just rub it into the garment, heat it up with a hairdryer or, you know, a heat gun, for a little while, work the wax in with a brush, which is what I do afterwards and before, and just let it hang dry for a day or two to cure, and so that it, you know, it's not too sticky. And that's it, basically. It's I think it's a very easy process, and I think it's a great thing to do for, you know, for places where you're going to get a lot of rain, because it's going to repel, and it wears in nicely as well. You get like a really nice creasing in the arms and other areas of your garments. So yeah, I definitely would recommend doing it. But bear in mind, it does change the look of the garment, because it's going to, you know, the cotton is going to get darker. It's going to be, you know, slightly a different color, and it's going to feel differently as well.
Does it impact, its ability to dry? The reason why I ask that is I've got a friend who's got like a Barbour or something like that, or like a vintage military jacket, and like it's what's that?
Barbour.
Barbour.
That's great. Barbour.
Barbour.
Guardian.
That they waxed. Man, I don't know much about this country. I had to ask who Prince Andrew was the other day when they were talking about the Queen. I need to get better educated. Though that said, no, I'm not going down that path.
What's the question? Does it impact the ability for the garment to dry?
Yeah, I was wondering that, because this person's wax jacket is like awesome jacket, but like it always has that kind of like not dry, damp smell. I'm wondering if you wax something that's not originally waxed, if you've got that problem, or if it's just how they
Again, you have to let it dry in a dry place. You just hang it out. Yeah, but I don't have a problem. I've had my Filson Nigel Caborn jacket for a number of years, and it's always getting wet. And yeah, you just let it hang dry separately, not with other items. Once it's dry, you can hang it with, you know, the rest of your jackets. So it's just, that's going back to the care and maintenance of your clothing. It might take a little bit more time, but yeah, just, I wouldn't say so, personally.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks, Lily. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say that question. I forgot to mention that was from Instagram user T-Up. So thanks for the question, T-Up. Sorry, David.
Yeah, I was going to mention that I've waxed a pair of boots at one point as well. I've got some old Grinsons that, like, the toe and heel is leather, but the rest of the boots just plain old canvas. So I waxed up the canvas on those, and that actually went pretty well too. Like, there's people who will like wax Vans, wax Converse to kind of like create more winter friendly trainers. And that went pretty good too. The only thing I'll mention there is, whenever I did it, I'd read online that you could also use a clothing iron. And as long as you like don't care about the clothing iron, or as long as you like clean it up afterwards, there's no real issue. But I will say, in hindsight, it's a bit of a pain to clean it. So I think definitely the hair dryer approach.
I would recommend a hair dryer or a heat gun. Yeah. Like I said, don't use an iron, because you could get into all sorts of a messy situation there. But yeah, you, back in, you know, the World Wars, you had people dubbing their boots, and that's quite a popular thing people still do with rough out pairs. So yeah.
But I guess rough out's technically speaking waterproof though on its own, right?
It's very water repellent. I wouldn't say it's waterproof.
Or like as much as Cremexil, I guess you'd say.
I think it's very good at repelling water because of the, you know, the texture on the body of it. So it's not going to dampen up as quick as some others, I think.
Maybe it's more splash proof as opposed to completely weatherproof.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I think rough out usually is just like Cremexil or a similar kind of, you know, oil pack.
It's just the other side of the skin. It's just the other side of the skin. Which hasn't been, you know, suede has been cut, and that's why you don't have as much texture on it, whereas the rough out hasn't had that treatment. The top layer hasn't been cut off, so you've, there's a lot more on it to repel the water versus the suede, which is, you know, very, very a lot more sensitive to things like that. But it's still water, you know, resistant suede. But it's just what it'll just mark up a lot quicker than rough out will. But it's another reason why wax flesh is great, because you've got the best of both worlds there. You've got the rough out and the wax treatment, which has gone on top of it. So.
Cool. Anyone want to grab another question, or do we want to wrap up?
I think let's call it there. Yeah, call it a day.
Cool, cool. All right, let me do the outro. So thanks again, everybody, for listening to the 14th episode of our podcast. Please rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, please follow us on Instagram at Sons of Selvage Podcast. Lastly, please message us on Instagram with any questions you'd like us to discuss in a future episode. Also, reach out to us if you'd like to join our Discord. It's free. So yeah, come on and hang out with us.
And if you want some smelly jeans, me.
Yeah, Tom Jitsu, if you want to get into that conversation.
He's on onlyfans.com.
Yeah.
Onlyfades.com.
Yeah. More like onlyfunk.com.
Oy vey.
Cool. Well, awesome, guys. Thanks again for another awesome episode.